Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we take a look at annuals and perennials and why you garden and a whole bunch of other things as well when we visit with Liz Freemuth. She provides concierge horticultural services through her business, The Garden Hoe. And we're talking about all things gardening, but zero in a little bit on the annuals and the perennials. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Love to hear from you. Liz, welcome back. Great to have you with us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. So enjoy coming.
Well, I tell you what, is this a busy time of the year for you, or is things slowing down? You work around the country, so...
It slows down for the majority of my clients around here. We're slowing down right now. Bed cleanup, things like that have been done, and we're continuing to work on them. It really has been surprising this year how long the leaves lasted on the plants, because we didn't have anything super hard. So that slowed the progress of getting into winter. Right now, I kind of go into holiday decos for some of the clients. So that up here, so that doesn't really slow down. Then start moving south in January or so for jaunts here and there. So right now, busy as ever.
Busy as ever. Well, that's a good thing.
We love it.
It's great to be busy. Yes, there's no doubt about that. Well, we want to talk a little bit about annuals and perennials today. I should say, though, before we go any further, that I went out to my lawn yesterday about just before dark with my mulching mower, and I mulched the rest of the leaves into the lawn. So I'm done. Except I have to turn over the pots, you know, and all that business. Yeah, but that's a quick job.
It feels good to move on to the next season. And I think that's one of the things I absolutely love about Wisconsin. I mean, it's the people, it's the challenge of trying to get things to do well, but it's also that change in seasons where you can change your mindset around a little bit. And for me, once we start, you know, turning the pots over, it's to me, that's you turn the pots over, let's look to next year. You're not done. You're just moving on to another phase, which is fantastic.
And is this probably a good enough time to think about next year?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, this is a really good time to think about it, especially, you know, as we talk about annuals and perennials. Perennials that you may have to hunt a little bit to find some unusual cultivar that you want, but often you can find them just fine. Annuals, on the other hand, if you have something specific in mind and you don't have the ability to grow it yourself, getting your requests into your local garden center now is a good thing, because then they can get the seed and grow it out for you, et cetera. And a lot of garden centers will do that. You know, most of them are not going to grow you four plants, but if you want a few flats of something specific, then you ask them for that and you may pay a little bit more, but you'll get exactly what you want. And so doing it now so that they can order the seed in and get things started late winter is a good idea.
Somebody asked me, what's really the difference between an annual and a perennial anyway? And I said, well...
life expectancy. Well, and to a certain extent, an annual technically is something that lives its life cycle within 1 year. Yeah. And so like hollyhock, which around here we consider an annual, is technically a biennial. So its lifespan is 2 years rather than 1 year. Perennial, in theory, is a plant that when you put it in has got a longer life expectation. So it's going to come back year after year. It may live its life cycle, but it will come back again and again, not from seed, but from that base plant.
Yeah. And there are some annuals that would be perennials elsewhere.
Exactly. When you're looking at things like poinsettias.
Yeah.
Those for us are annuals, but you go into tropical areas and they're shrubs. The same thing with geraniums. You go to Florida, you'll see geranium trees. You go to California, you see geranium shrubs and hedges. Here, the regular geraniums, you know, the outside geraniums are annuals and that's it. That doesn't mean they won't live longer than that. That's for us, it's an annual. The same thing with tropical plants. Those for us, we consider annuals or houseplants. Anywhere else in their native land, they're going to be perennials.
Limey's looking pretty good, though. Limey has not lost her leaves or anything. I put her in the bedroom here several weeks back now, but usually she...
Drop something, right?
Yeah. She hasn't dropped anything, so...
She's a woman. We drop stuff. That's the way it is.
Oh, limey the lime tree.
Which is great, because your lime should be... Did it blossom? Did it do a fall blossom for you?
It usually blossoms when I bring it in. Mm-hmm. It doesn't do anything until I bring it in. And then about now, the blossom should be coming. Mm-hmm. For some reason, that's about a few weeks after Limey's in.
To me, there's nothing better than citrus blossoms in the house.
It smells so good.
You open the door and you can smell it. And that I think is one reason why that's one of my favorite things to bring in as a house plant, because it lives beautifully in our humidity during the summer. But you bring it in and it does just fine and it smells fabulous. So that we don't get out of a lot of other stuff here.
Liz Freemuth, our guest. If you have a question, comment, maybe something about why you garden. We haven't gotten into that yet, but... Love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. 800-642-1234.
Well, I'm going to tell you a story about why I love to garden. I mean, number one, I've done it all of my life, but I learned how to do it from my grandparents and my parents. And so there's a lot of good memories associated with playing in the dirt.
Yeah.
But also I noticed as I got more technical with things that I did, whether that was college, businesses, before I got into horticulture, I went to the garden more and more with every technical bit that I took on. And it's that balancing act of high tech versus keeping yourself grounded, so to speak, in the dirt. I was asked to a dinner party one number of years ago, and the request was bring something that represents your favorite memory. And so that was really a good stumper. And I ended up bringing a container of wet dirt. And that was the response I got to for the other people at the dinner party. But the question was, well, how is this a memory? And I said, well, you know, all of the times I was trying to think of a common thread throughout all of those lovely memories of spending time with grandparents, and I was raised on a farm. And so spending time outside, what is that common theme? And it was the smell of the good bacteria in wet dirt was prevalent in most of those memories.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's
nothing like that smell.
There really isn't. It's just one of those in the late fall when they're turning the earth, if it's got good bacteria in it, or early in the spring, roll the windows down in the car and enjoy it. It's wonderful. But I'd love to hear why other people garden. I find it fascinating.
Rebecca from Madison had a question for us, and she says, what do you mean by turn over the pots? Why do you do that? And... Well, I have some terracotta pots. Mm-hmm. Exactly. If I don't turn those pots over...
They turn themselves into two or three.
Yeah, the soil in them will expand, you know, in the freezing and thawing. And I've cracked enough of those that I now am thinking I'm smart. Smarter.
Take the dirt out, turn them over... To me, when you turn a pot over, you're less likely to bump into it and crack it when it's outside in the cold, because they do get brittle when they're outside in the cold. So even if you take all the dirt out, and granted, you can't do that for a 55-gallon container, but for things that are knee-high and less, if you can flip those over, they're less likely to crack, split, and you knock it with a bag of groceries or something like that and have it break.
Now, I've got some heavy plastic pots outside that I just leave them.
They're fine.
Yeah, they're fine. But those, anything like terracotta, you do need to turn if you want them next year.
Yeah, if you don't, then just let them be. I've got a couple that are too big for me to turn over, and they're too big for me to take all of the soil out. And so what I do is I dig out a trench in the middle of it. I take about a third of the soil out of the middle and all the way down to the bottom. And that way, if it expands and contracts, then it's got room to go in the middle. And then the soil doesn't push against the outside of the pots, which can be a problem.
Had a great big pot this year that I put some, and I'm trying to remember the potatoes, but they were these small purple ones from South America. Boy, were they good.
You know, that one, people look at you funny when you say, I love the purple potatoes, but to me, you don't eat as many of those. There's something about the fiber in them, or maybe it's the color, I don't know, but it's just they're more satisfying in smaller amounts than, you know.
And they look pretty on a plate.
They do. They do. And some of them didn't, some of the cultivars that they had did not keep the purple color after they were cooked, like green beans or asparagus, you know, stuff like that. But those little ones from South America keep the color beautifully.
Perfect.
They're wonderful.
They're wonderful. Deborah in New Berlin has something for us, so let's go there. Hi, Deborah. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. We're actually in the car on the way to Madison to attend the state football game. But I have a question about our flower beds. My husband and I have extensive flower beds with mostly hostas and ligularia. We have lots of shades, so we really can't grow any flowering plants. And we always wonder in the fall, is it better to leave the plant leaves on and just let them decompose in place, or is it better to clear off all that plant material? Some of our hostas are really large-leaved hostas, and our ligularia were really big this year.
Mm-hmm. It depends on the plant. For those two plants specifically, you can cut those back as soon as your time allows. When you get into fall, they've had as much light and nutrients as they need to pop up again in the spring. And if you don't like that look of dead hosta leaves all over the place, you can cut them back and they'll be fine. With things like peonies, which you don't have an issue with, although you might want to try a tree peony in the shade, they do beautifully. Those actually, peonies, yes, you do need to cut back in the fall, because the stems are woody enough that if they get wet, oftentimes that moisture can go down into the roots, which are fairly close to the surface and can actually cause some root rot. So when we look at do you take things down or don't you, it really kind of comes down to specific plants. In general, I'm one of those that says, if this is your garden and it bothers you to have those leaves looking dead, take them off. For the most part, things will be fine. If it is a very expensive plant that you have a lot of time invested to, then I would do things according to the book, most definitely.
I was just thinking about my own hostas. I have, counting in my head here, 24, I think, only. Mm-hmm. Not a huge number, but I just leave them. Yeah. I don't mind it.
I
don't either. So
you don't cut. You don't cut them back, or you don't leave them.
You leave them.
Are you talking Larry or
you?
Well, we've kind of done both, and it's so much work to cut them back. I was wondering if it's harmful at all to leave them.
No.
Do you want me to tell you?
Leave them.
Do you want me to tell you it's harmful, so you don't feel obligated to cut them back? Because I can do that.
It's not harmful. Leave them right where they are, Deborah.
That's not one of those plants that is going to be harmed by leaving them alone. It's also not a plant that's going to be harmed by cutting them back if you so choose either. That one is kind of a no-brainer plant, which I love about them, other than the deer consider them salad bars. But
that's what I think.
Yeah, but otherwise it's a nice plant because it doesn't require a lot of thought and action on your part, which is wonderful. So if you feel like you want to leave them, leave them. You're okay.
Perfect. That's the answer I wanted to hear.
All right. Thanks, Deborah.
Maybe we should have started with what you wanted to hear.
Happy Tea Day. Thanks a lot for calling. Lynn in Spring Green, it's your turn. Hi, Lynn.
Good day.
Good day to you. What's on your mind today?
I have what is probably an unusual question. Excuse me. I've been slowly moving into a cabin in rural Spring Green that is actually a town hall that was put on the one flat area of a former quarry that kind of didn't get quarried much.
Mm-hmm.
You can't even tell it's a quarry because, the usual culprits have come in and covered it, and it looks green. And I am curious about things. It's limestone, so
mm-hmm.
I'm curious about things you think might work in this quote-unquote soil, which is basically
it's rock. What you're talking about is rock gardening to the extreme, right?
And I did actually put in some perennials by my east door by mixing in some some soil, and they're doing okay, mm-hmm. but I'm looking for suggestions.
Okay, what type of plant did you put in that's doing okay?
Well, I put in some of the sort of rock covering things, like there was some woolly thyme and that mm-hmm. sort of thing around
yeah.
the edges.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I went to a local greenhouse and I asked this question. I said, "What do you think might work?" Mm-hmm. And but prior to that, I put in just some things that I love that may or may not do well, like coral bells and mm-hmm. excuse me. So I'm just looking for, they may not make it to next year. I just was yeah. having fun and didn't have time to do very much when I was in the middle of moving.
Well, yeah. having fun is part of it too. And, you know, we can say a plant will not grow here, 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 and here, but I'll tell you what I do in my yard, because I have to go out and look at why things fail in other people's yards. So I will put, I'll try three spots for a plant if I'm not sure how it's going to do. I will try what is prescribed as the conditions in the place for it to grow. I will put one where there is no way it is supposed to grow, and I will put one where kind of marginal, but maybe with a little care it might do all right. And I will tell you, I've been very surprised that things that were not supposed to grow where I put them have done beautifully. So, you know, sometimes the recommendations are, if everything is perfect, will do well. So I would say experiment to your heart's content. But when you're looking at raising stuff in limestone situation, quarry, you know, with not a lot of topsoil, look Mediterranean, because that's really what you're kind of dealing with.
Huh.
You probably would have a little bit better soil Mediterranean-wise just because of the age, if you're talking native. But you might lean more toward that. I would try lavenders, because they're going to love the heat and they will actually tolerate some quite weird soil. I've had lavenders do very well in situations of new builds where there's been some hardscape work. So you've got some limestone gravel underneath there, and they've done actually surprisingly well. So,
a little lavender, and it is really happy.
So I would go look Mediterranean in the plants and start seeing if there are things in there that make you happy, that satisfy maybe what you had as a preconceived notion of what you liked as a plant, and that might be color, texture, size, shape of the leaves, etc. But keep playing around. Why not?
How fun.
Specific questions. I did put in a peony for old time's sake. My grandma always had one at the door. You went out to go into her garden to gather. Should I trim that back or just let it be until next spring?
Herbaceous peony? Trim it back.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yep.
And last question, mm-hmm. what do you think about milkweed?
Love it.
Think it might work?
Might. Give it a whirl. It typically will grow in some kind of tough situations. Now, there is a wetland milkweed that's going to require more water. But if you start looking at upland milkweeds, even some kind of weird one, like the Asclepias physocarpus, that one is a white one, and it's kind of a weirder one that you might be able to get that to grow in your situation. But what is it going to cost you to find some seed and sprinkle it around?
Yeah.
Not much.
Nothing.
Not much.
Know where I can gather them already.
There you go. And you know, plants will find a fissure somewhere in that and kind of reach down and get what they need if they're even remotely happy. So give it a whirl.
Yeah.
Let us know how it comes out next year.
Yeah, for sure.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks, Lynn. Appreciate it. Liz Freemuth, our guest today, she provides horticultural services through her business, The Garden Hoe. I'm Larry Mueller. Cheryl Gasser, our on-air producer for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Next Friday on Garden Talk, we'll visit about adding scent to your garden with Mark Dwyer. So that's coming up next Friday and replayed Saturday morning on Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Liz Freemuth. And we will take some more calls. You can join in, 800-642-1234. I haven't looked on Facebook yet, but if you've got a good garden photo or two you want to post up there with a question, or without.
Yeah.
Without.
Post pretty. We're happy with post pretty.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go to Nick in West Bend next. Nick, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hey, good morning, guys, girls.
guys is generic in my book. Go for it.
Okay. I have an oak leaf hydrangea and a summer glow tamarisk and then a smoke bush. Mm-hmm. I just want to know, I've like trimmed back the oak leaf hydrangea several times. It just doesn't seem to do that well when I do that.
Yeah, don't do that. And then, don't do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I kind of figured. And then what about the tamarisk and the smoke bush?
The tamarisk, if you want to keep it under control a little bit, you can do that. But what are you looking for from it?
It's newly planted, but I just, because I know they're not entirely hardy for our area.
Yeah.
I just want to keep it in the garden, but, keep it living.
It's not entirely hardy, but I have seen some that have gotten spectacular in size. So if it loves where it's at, it might actually grow bigger than what you want, which is why I asked what you want from it. Do you want height or do you want to keep it under control? If it's only been in for a couple of years, I would give it at least 4 before you start hacking and whacking on it. Other than errant branches here or there, the common thing on anything is on pruning almost any plant out there. Dead, diseased, dying, crossing, and rubbing. Get rid of those. Alleviate that issue. I don't know that you're going to have that much of a problem with the tamarisk, quite frankly.
No.
I think it's going to be just happy-go-lucky, and you may have to remove a dead branch here or there. But I really wouldn't do a whole lot. If you feel as though it's a little bit under stress and you really do want to work at keeping it alive, wait until the ground freezes solid and then put a nice hefty layer of mulch over the root zone. And that will help that freezing and thawing, which, with the tamarisk, it will come back from healthy root. It won't get tremendously tall, but you should get some sprouts even if the top does die back. So you should be fine with that. Anytime you add mulch in the fall, always wait until after the ground freezes solid. Otherwise, you're providing bed and breakfast for rodents, and they'll move in. So that's why it's like, okay, just wait until it freezes solid, then get your mulch out there. The oak leaf hydrangea, really minimal pruning on that one. It takes a long time, as you know, to respond from a regular hydrangea type pruning. So that one, just leave it alone. Are you giving that one any acid treatments at all?
Not really. I've had the plant for probably 8 years. Mm-hmm. I've moved it several times, and like my wife, she's, that thing looks really ratty. You should top it back, and I do minimal pruning on it. But I like when it's huge and in its full glory and everything.
Leaf color on oak leaf hydrangea for the fall is beautiful, too.
Yes. It's one of the nicest plants in my garden.
Yep.
Which I went to horticulture school at METC, so I got a background in it. But some of the plants, we were iffy on touching on what they needed. So,
sure.
Well, and actually, with that, if it looks a little iffy, I don't know that I would put anything on other than kind of a regular fertilizer that might be a little bit heavier in acid. But then put some peat moss around it, too. That will help a little bit. What was your third plant? Oh, smoke bush. Smoke bush. Which one do you have? Purple leaf?
Yep, the regular Cotoinus, yeah.
Okay, are you looking at leaf color, or do you like the blooms on it, or both?
It doesn't. I planted it last year, and it's like actually tripled in size. Not that that's a bad thing, because it's in a really good spot to get its full size and everything. I just don't know, because I know that's kind of another tender.
You're good. No, you're good. That one, that one, and actually that's one of my favorite hack and whacks. It's not necessarily tender. What we do see is a lot of dieback because it is susceptible to verticillium wilt, and so you may see it die back from that. And I am not, Brian will kill me if he hears this. I think he's in New Zealand, so he won't hear it now. But I advocate on, especially on the burning bush, cutting back, disinfecting your utensils, whether that's pruner or saw, whatever it is, between cuts, seriously. Otherwise, you can spread it within that shrub. But I've had them sprout from the roots and just keep coming back for more and more. So even if you do get dieback, it should be okay. If you don't really care so much about the blooms, then you can cut it at any time of the year. If you really want the blooms, you cut it back right after it blooms, and you should be fine. But it's a good hack and whack. You can keep it to whatever size you like or let it go hog wild.
There you go.
Okay, so I wouldn't need to do any pruning on it at all.
Nope.
I didn't want to.
Well, wait, that was the right answer then from all of our perspectives.
Thanks, Nick.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, appreciate the call. All right, Jenny in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I have two questions, one easy, one hard.
Mm-hmm.
Easy question, I have some citronellas that I got. And I seem to remember my grandmother keeping them in the garage all winter.
Yep.
Can I overwinter them?
Yeah.
And they'll be okay?
They will. If you, and depending on how many you have, you could bring them in as houseplants also. There is that adjustment period, but otherwise, yeah, keep them in the garage. The only thing I proviso on keeping things in the garage is do remember that your exhaust gives off fumes that can potentially kill plants if you keep them in a garage where the car is running with the door closed. Just like humans, we don't like to live in a garage with the car running and the door closed, the plants as well. So I would just be a little bit careful with that. You could put them in a basement in a cool, damp spot in your basement or mist them down once a month. What you don't want them to do is dry out completely and totally to nothing because they will die. So you just have to keep them a little moist over winter. But otherwise, bring them in as houseplants. They'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. They won't be safe from my cat.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing when you brought that up, Jenny. I can't bring anything in.
Yeah,
garage it is. Garage it is.
You know, if
my hard question though is, I've got a problem. It's called Japanese knotweed.
Oh.
Yeah, can you move?
Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I can't. I know that I'm not gonna kill it.
Mm-hmm.
But I was wondering if there was maybe, like, it's invading my property from a public piece of public property.
Oh.
I told the city about it, and I'm like, hey, this is a non-native invasive species. The DNR says so.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent them the brochure. And they're like, okay, and they just came and cut it down.
Yeah, no, you're going to have to, if it's coming in from city property, what you might want to do is send them a little bit more detailed information on control. And I think the DNR does actually have good information on control. Now, for yourself, I know personally it's not my favorite thing to do is to get out the glyphosate and start painting on plants, but that really is going to be one of your only options because the more you cut that, the happier it is, the more it will want to spread. So what you need to do is cut it down to the surface of the ground a little bit above and then paint it with glyphosate, Roundup, etc., you know, something like that. Paint it with a paintbrush on the cut surface and then around the outside edge, and you just have to keep at that. And if you're not going to control where it came from, but maybe you can control how bad it gets in your yard by kind of batting it around.
Outbreak.
Yeah.
Is there like a plant I can plant like between the outbreak and my yard to help?
It'll
come through it. It'll go through any. I mean, that stuff will actually even go through cracks in concrete and kind of split it apart. So it really is. I think it's in your best interest to go back to the city. I mean, do some control on your part, but then go back to the city and say, you know, look, this is creating a serious issue in my own yard, and this is how it needs to be controlled. So, and it may take more than one visit. It may take a bit of persistence on your part, but I think it would be worth it because no matter what you do in your yard, if it's not controlled on the other side, it'll just keep coming back for more and more, unfortunately. And oftentimes with persistent and voracious plants, you can do a head-to-head competition, put a tough one in that's going to battle it out with it. But in this case, no, the knotweed's going to win, unfortunately.
Unfortunately. Thank you so much for calling. Back to the garage for just a minute. Mm-hmm. One thing that I do if I put pots out there and, you know, just to keep the plants over winter, I usually will set them. Rather than set them on the floor, I'll put them on
put them up a little bit.
I'll put them up a little bit, or at least I'll put down a piece of wood or something and put the pot on top of the wood.
Usually, unless it's a bulb, I don't worry about it tremendously, but because that actually will abort the flower. Yeah, so some people do start bulbs in their garage, but then they leave the exhaust running, and the fumes on that, the ethanol, will actually abort the blooms as they develop on the inside of the bulbs. So, so that's one of those things where if you want to be a little bit cautious, you do, and putting them up a little bit higher or just not leaving the garage door closed while you get the car running, that
put
is...
Put them on a shelf, that's better.
Exactly, and put them away from the end of the car, then you know you're probably doing all right with that then.
Peter and Shelby, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. So this last August, I took a little big vacation in Madison. I did a couple hundred miles on the trails. And the advantage of that is I went through, you go through a lot of people's backyards. Mm. And everywhere I went, there were prairie gardens. The whole city of Madison seems to be turning their lawns over to prairie gardens.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a beautiful kaleidoscope of color. So I went out to the Arboretum because I wanted to find out when did this movement happen and how did the Madison change the culture of mowing every week? And then where did the plants come from? I couldn't get any answers because, you know, I would like to create some prairie gardens where I live. But where do the plants come from? How did this start? When did it start? Because it was phenomenal. The beauty of those lawns. And even in some of the yards you would go, you know, on the trails, you're looking down on someone's yards. Every little, there were so many, you know, mini parks. People made little mini parks, little trails. It was fabulous.
Hmm.
Well, I don't want to brag, but one of the things that we've done on this program, and we have a big listenership in Madison, is to talk about that very sort of thing. And I think not only Garden Talk, but other programs. And you look at the Master Gardener program here. Lisa Johnson's done a great job with that sort of thing,
absolutely,
too.
Absolutely, yeah.
And when you have Neil DeBull from Prairie Nursery on every so often talking about it, I think that helps.
It does. And you know, really, Wisconsin has been in the past really in touch with nature and respects nature tremendously. And I think the whole native perennial movement really goes back almost to the 70s and possibly even a little bit before that, where you saw some pretty intensive landscape architects using native plants, but more of in kind of a traditional setting. But Neil has been phenomenal in getting native plants out there to a lot of people.
And I would also add, because it's Madison, we have the UW Arboretum here, and I think the Arboretum has had an impact on people as well.
I think so, too, and there are so many spaces that Wisconsinites and visitors to Wisconsin can walk in nature and, you know, the trail in Madison, et cetera, that you can see how lovely it can look. And I don't know about the rest of you people out there, but I don't want to spend my day mowing lawn, and not to disrespect lawn, because people do love their grass and we all love a nice little clean little bit of green, but it is a lot of time spent in keeping something short. And I'm all for letting it go and me not having to worry about it until next week. But I think that has something to do with it. The fuel prices had something to do with it in the 70s and the 80s.
Yeah.
To go to that lawn mowing kind of aspect of perennials versus not.
Yeah. So lots of things, lots of factors there. Peter, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Terry in Pewaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Terry.
Hi there. I love the show. I learn something useful every time I listen, so I really appreciate
Thank you.
All the knowledge that you send forth. My question is, I purchased a couple lilac bushes this summer, did not get them planted, so they're still in the pots.
Mm-hmm.
Over the course of the summer, they developed powdery mildew.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering now, are they salvageable? Should I keep them?
Sure.
Can we plant them, or should we put them in the garage for the winter? Would they survive?
Yes, yes, no, yes, probably. they'll be fine. Lilacs actually are kind of prone, a lot of them are prone to powdery mildew. Brian Huddleston, the plant disease director, likens it to frosting on plants. And that is kind of what it looks like. Even if they are prone to it, particular cultivars and strains are prone to it, by increasing airflow and really getting the pruning thinned out a little bit, the structure thinned out a little bit, you can prevent some of that from developing horribly. Can you put them into the ground? Absolutely. The ground is still fairly warm. Planting at this time of the year, and lilacs are tough, so they will take it. You may see a slight bit of dieback. Get them into the ground as soon as possible, though, and just make sure that you work the soil up to, I would say, about at least 2 to 3 times the width of the pot so that you've got a really nice amount of loose soil around that plant. Make sure it gets watered in really well right now. And then as soon as the ground freezes solid, get some sort of mulch over that, whether that's leaves, small branches, regular mulch, anything like that. Because what you want to do is really minimize the amount of heaving that can happen around that plant. The roots are not going to take at this time of the year, but they're going to. But they're going to be there. And if you provide a loose environment for them to move around a little bit without that whole thing popping up out of the ground, they'll survive and really kind of take hold as soon as the ground is warm enough for those roots to start spreading and the sap begins to move and life starts to happen again in the spring to that plant. So that's really what you're preparing for now is for spring. And if you make that hole nice and big, you've got less of a chance for that pot to basically, without the plastic on it, pop out of the ground. Can you keep it in the garage over winter? Probably. I think that's a little bit too warm for a lilac. Lilacs are cold-loving critters, and you really do want them to get what they can out of the winter. I would advocate putting it in the ground rather than trying to keep it in the pot. I've had marginal success with overwintering just the pots unless they're really, really well insulated. And especially in just a home atmosphere, I think you're better off getting them in the ground.
You know, I always have to cut the boughs off the bottom of my Christmas tree when I get it.
There you go.
I always use those because they're handy.
They are, and they're wonderful insulation. So, and that's right about the time that you need to put those things on is after Christmas, and you know when you can even use a live Christmas tree. Just cut the branches off and put those on. So you do want it to be frozen solid. What you don't want is for that ground to freeze thaw. So that's why you want to moderate the temperatures. So
okay, and we do have black walnuts in our yard. I'm planning to keep them far away from where the roots would be. I'm assuming that would be a good strategy, correct?
Yeah, lilacs can tolerate some walnut depending on which lilac it is. But if you have walnuts that are of any size, you're going to have roots all over. And so keeping them away from the drip line of a large walnut tree is a good idea if you're trying to minimize exposure to jugloan, because that will come off of the leaves, the nuts, the roots, the bark, everything. But I have had some lilacs that do just fine underneath walnuts. So they're the tough old garden variety.
Yeah.
And they do okay.
There you go.
All right. Well, thank you so very much. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Good luck. Get them planted. It's okay. Get them planted.
Thanks.
It'll
a
give
lot.
The neighbor something to talk about why she's out digging a hole in her yard.
Liz Freemuth, our guest today. She provides concierge horticultural services through her business, The Garden Hoe. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. You are listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller with my guest, Liz Freemuth from The Garden Hoe. Great to have her along. Thank you for listening in. We have an email from John in Beloit. He's got a 25 by 25 vegetable garden. Hadn't used it for a couple of years, and so it's been taken over by weeds. He wants to garden next summer. Is it too late to weed, or should I wait until spring? How do I begin? Please help!
Because you're asking, I feel as though you need to do something. So that means you can get out there, you can get stuff cleaned off. The unfortunate thing is that most of those weed seeds have fallen, so you're going to have a weed seed population to deal with in the spring. But that doesn't mean you can't work on the soil between now and then. And if you've got leaves in your yard, you know, Larry was talking about going out and getting his mulch. You can actually use those mulch leaves to put over the garden and just allow them to decompose and break down over winter. And, you know, add some of those other things that you're collecting from the yard. If you've got branches that you're picking up and maybe mulching or chipping, you can put those on as well. And then when spring comes, you can lightly turn the soil over. You'd be surprised at even what weed roots will do to the soil itself. So you're going to have a lot of decomposing material in there. So it does need to be turned over. But yeah, you can get started on doing things like that. Why not? A fall fertilizer for vegetable gardens, you can get that down as well. So go to the garden center and ask them for a good fall application for fertilizer, and you can get going on it. You're fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, don't worry about it. And then next year when you plant and you if you mulch the in between the rows, you can cut back a lot of the weed problems.
You really can. And, you know, it might seem insurmountable about the third week of June, but if you don't go on any vacations at all and you get out there every day, you should be able to keep it under control. But absolutely, you know, mulching between the rows makes it much more manageable.
Absolutely. Ellen in La Crosse, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, and good afternoon. I had a comment regarding one of the previous callers' discussion about Japanese knotweed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I have found a great solution for it. It's quite simple. Eat it.
And how does one prepare knotweed, and what parts are edible?
The entire stalk is edible if you catch it about under 2 feet.
Mm-hmm.
After that, it starts to get a little woodsy, but it's still edible.
Mm-hmm.
And it tastes like rhubarb.
Really?
Basically, any rhubarb recipe, you can use Japanese knotweed.
Okay, and you're sure that this is not toxic at all, period? You haven't died, right? You're not talking to us from the grave. You're okay, right?
I have not died, but there is one medical condition that it can be dangerous with, and I don't call the name of that, but it's
so people do easily, need to check. Yeah,
it is easily Googleable.
Okay, and what led you to try eating knotweed?
I had dealt with it for about 6 years on a property, and 1 year I had just researched it in trying to figure out how to get rid of it, and I came across where there are several people making different recipes out of it. Mm-hmm. So I decided to go out there and try it, and it turns out it's actually pretty delicious.
And it has that same tanginess that rhubarb does?
Yeah, not as tangy, though, as rhubarb.
Okay. And you cook it, you boil it, cook it, saute it, anything like that, like you would? Okay. Have you tried to make jam out of it?
I have not made jam yet, but it does make a good pie.
It does, seriously.
Well, if it makes a good pie, it should make a good jam.
I have made a compote out of it, and that turned out quite well.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm so happy I learned something new today, because I did not know knotweed was edible, and maybe that should be put out to the city. Then, nobody will have to control it. Everybody will be out picking it. That would be fantastic.
Exactly. Yeah, do a little Google search on edible Japanese knotweed, and you'll be quite amazed.
Thank you, Alan.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Well, let's see. Alex and Nicolay emailed to ask, can you grow ginger root in Wisconsin? Is it a perennial in this climate?
I am going to assume that he's talking about the ginger root that we use for cooking. And it's not hardy for us here. It's definitely not a perennial. You can grow it as an annual in pots, but it takes longer than 1 year to get the size root that you need. So you'd have to take it in and out. But I don't see why you couldn't do that if you had a large enough pot. I don't see why you couldn't do that.
Linda in Racine, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I'm wondering if you have any recommendations for plants that will go into a rain garden. We had a rain garden put in probably about 4 years ago. And we have a downspout off the house that goes into it, and this year it looked pretty good. Some years it gets a little dry, so we try to keep it, wet with a hose.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't able to. The guy who put it in for us put some sedges in, and there wasn't enough water for that.
Mm-hmm.
So in his design, he had the sedges in there so that the monkey flowers could lean on the sedges. And that didn't work. And it seems like the taller, some of the taller plants, like the wild bergamot, have moved to the front.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're really deep rooted at this point. But we're trying to think about how to kind of rework things or introduce other things.
Yeah, sure. Do you have any Jopi weed in there?
No, we don't.
You might want to look at some of the different species of the eupatoriums, because there are some that do better with a little bit more wet feet. And really, in a rain garden, what you're looking for are plants that will tolerate what they're given, whether that's a little bit more of an upland condition with periodic wet, because it's otherwise it would be a wetland garden. And so really a rain garden should just, those plants should be able to accommodate being inundated with moisture and survive beautifully. So I would look at some of those. Also Helenium, you may want to take a look at that, and it's Helen. It's Helen, like the name Helen, I-U-M, Helenium. Okay. Yes.
Okay.
And all right. Because that one actually is an unusual plant. We're seeing it a little bit more, but it's unusual to be used in a rain garden. But I have had phenomenal luck with that in places that get hit with high levels of moisture or have an extreme amount of groundwater close to the surface that during wet periods rises even further. And they actually, it looks like kind of a heavy-duty cosmos or coreopsis, but a little bit stiffer stem, almost a little bit kind of like an aster. It's sort of in that look, and they've got yellow, reds, oranges, and typically an early fall bloom or late summer, early fall, but that one does tolerate quite a bit of moisture. Another thing to provide, are you looking just for natives, or are you open to almost anything?
Well, I'm open to almost anything, although I do like natives.
Yeah, there are sedges that will tolerate more of an upland condition. And so, it's that fine line where they have to be able to tolerate some of the moisture. There are wetland sedges, and then there are more of an upland kind of a border sedge. And so you can look at some of those, and a lot more readily available than they had been in the past. So you may have better luck finding that, but just make sure that when you go shopping, you've done your homework ahead of time. If you're looking for something that's not necessarily a native, one of my favorite grasses is Heikana Chloa, or the Japanese forest grass, which loves wet feet, and it does not like to have its crown wet, but it loves wet feet, which is really kind of what you would be looking for in a rain garden in the mid-level, not necessarily the bottom where it's going to be wet, but where it will tolerate some moisture. There's a lot of other perennials out there, and actually I would even suggest going to Neil's website and taking a look
at Prairie Nursery,
yeah, because they've got some phenomenal selections for rain gardens in there as well.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, that'll keep you more in the native realm.
Okay, yeah, I did try to put a great blue lobelia in, and that, I don't know if it, I can usually identify some weeds very specifically, and then I'll get rid of those, so I don't think I pulled it out.
Yeah.
That didn't seem to come back. And I did read an article about Camassia.
Yes. Yep.
And we just put some bulbs in to see how they do, because it was be an early plant, and we've got that sort of on the edge of the garden. So.
Yeah, and that will tolerate a bit of moisture also. So you should be good with that one almost anywhere in the rain garden.
There we go. All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Linda.
Have fun with it. Don't worry about it. Have fun with it.
Yeah. Sharon in Green Lake County. Hi.
Good morning. Listen to your show almost every week and really enjoy it.
Thank you.
Couple of questions. Johnny come lately here. Korean spruce, didn't get it out of the pot. It's about 4 feet tall. Should I overwinter it in the garage, or what should I do with it?
Are you going to use it for a Christmas tree?
No.
Then I would actually get it in the ground. Yeah, go ahead. And it's similar to what I had talked to you about earlier with the lilac. Make sure we're running out of time, so you do need to get that done right away because the soil temps are lowering with each cold night that we have. So make the hole plenty big, loosen it up, get it well planted, get it watered in, and then make sure once the ground freezes to get it mulched very, very, very well. What you don't want to do is forget to water it between now and the time you get it into the ground, because the more moisture that is in that plant now, the better it's going to do over winter, because the only way a plant gets any moisture during the winter, remember it's frozen, is what's in the system before winter starts, before it freezes solid. And with evergreens, it's right up to the point where the ground freezes solid. So while it's in the pot and when it's in the ground, up until the ground freezes solid, make sure that you're getting water on that consistently. Two inches, equivalent of 2 inches of rainwater per week. And you should be fine. You should be absolutely fine with it.
I have another question.
Sure.
Number one, or number two, I guess, what about putting it in the compost pile? I've done that with evergreens in other years. And I also have some mums that are in little tiny pots that haven't gotten planted. I was going to put them out in big pots that they're about 25 inches across and just plant them and maybe mulch them.
You can do that. Mums, little tiny mums, I play with all the time, and I've had success based on what the winter does, whether we've got ice, snow, etc. on them, as to whether you can just pop them in the ground or leave them in the pot. The only thing with an evergreen is the compost pile too warm, and will it keep the root zone too warm? If it does, then it won't actually, it will continue to need moisture throughout the winter. I think you might actually get a little bit more needle death on it if you put it in the compost pile. So if you just have one plant between the mums and the evergreen to put in, go with the evergreen and get it in the ground.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Liz Freemuth, our guest today, she's somebody who, why do you like to garden in 15 seconds?
It's fun. It's a challenge. It's fun. Sometimes I win. Sometimes I lose. And I'm okay with that.
But you always suit up for the game.
You got it. Suit up and play hard.
Oh, man. Liz Freemuth, our guest today, she provides concierge horticultural services through her business, The Garden Hoe. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with Liz Freemuth, who is a horticulturist extraordinaire. She provides concierge horticultural services through her business, The Garden Hoe. Liz, you have a website.
I do. I haven't looked at it for a while, but I think it's still out there. It's The Garden Hoe.
Yeah, and it's...
.com.
.com, yeah.
Yep.
GardenHoe.com. Nancy in Duluth has a question for us, so maybe we can go there. Nancy, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. So excited to talk to Larry Mueller. I am a Minnesota resident. I like NPR, but I adore Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank you.
Awesome. I just listen to it 24/7. Yes, I'm calling because I heard the discussion about taking care of a tamarisk.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the Southwest in the United States for 21 years, and in that time I became a native plant person, and I do that now. I help do restoration projects. I started by doing restoration out there, and so I'm a huge advocate for using our native plants. And tamarisk is called salt cedar out west, and it is one of the most invasive wetland species, along with Russian olive, or introduced species. And I can't tell you the sweat equity and hours that my town and other places along the Rio Grande River put in to eradicate it. And I'm just surprised that it's available, that people grow it up here. I know the soil is different here. It's less alkaline, but to me, it's really not an appropriate plant to have to bring it, you know, to be growing anywhere. How that happened up in the North Country here.
Yeah.
Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling.
And, you know, once you've put in sweat equity somewhere on eradicating an invasive, it really does leave a lasting impression. And in other parts of the country, they do have to worry about the invasiveness of the tamarisk and a lot of other plants as well. If it's in an individual's garden and, you know, unlike knotweed, which is going to spread horribly into other people's yards. Up here, we don't have a serious invasive issue with the tamarisk, not at this point. As we get warmer, perhaps it will be the same thing. But at this point, we don't have a horrible, horrible issue with it. If it's in, if you have a plant that is listed by the DNR as something that really needs watching and eradicating, then please, by all means, do the appropriate thing and get rid of it.
Yeah. Thank you so much for calling.
It's always a good reminder.
Yeah. You can join in, too. We have open lines. Get you on really quickly here at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly, as I said. Susan in Milwaukee emailed, can all annuals be saved by taking them in during the winter?
There are some that will respond better than others to moving into a dry house environment. Most houses, you're going to have an 85% reduction in light available to plants, even in a sunny window. So if you have a plant that will tolerate low light, or if you can provide artificial light, then you can simulate some of the exterior conditions. The humidity, the really, really low humidity in our houses often plays a more important part in those not surviving than the light itself, because we can simulate light. You can simulate humidity, increases in humidity as well. It's just a little bit more difficult to do because if you're humidifying one small area, that's going to dissipate into the rest of the dry house. And so that can actually impact whether they'll survive or not. Short answer is not all. There are many that do respond very well. One of the problems you have of moving annuals into the house is not just the light and the humidity, but also any insects or diseases that may have gotten into the soil that would survive okay outside without detrimental effects to the plant. Once you move them in the house, conditions are better and it just explodes and will take the plant out. So is it worth a shot? Yeah, if you like your annuals, bring them in. Victorians were very good about houseplants and using them inside and outside. So just be aware of the optimal growing conditions for each plant you're trying to bring in and try and simulate that, and you might do just fine. Why not?
Why not? Helen in Lancaster emailed to ask about plants that attract butterflies, especially monarchs. Of course, we've got milkweed.
We have milkweed.
But there are other plants that the butterflies need, monarchs need at other times of the year.
There are. And, you know, to me, when I look at, is it just monarchs that you want to bring in, or is it more insects of all types and more butterflies? You know, fennel is fantastic for swallowtail. There's, to me, a diverse and really plentiful supply of almost anything is going to be fantastic. So, you know, milkweed, yes, everything loves milkweed. And that's one that's been eradicated because of farming and getting, you know, gooing up the equipment, et cetera. So we can understand that, but you can bring it back in and put it into your yard. There's many different types that do fantastic. So you're looking at color, you're looking at nectar, you're looking at structure for them to land on, etc. I actually know that in the spring we had monarchs that would come through and they loved the box elder trees when they were in flower. You know, and so go figure. But we had trees that would just shimmer with the monarchs when they were coming through in the spring. It was fantastic.
Well, Lynn in Stevens Point has a question for you. Let's go to her. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. Thanks. I'm calling because I have some miniature irises. They only grow about maybe 4 inches high, and they bloom really early in the spring. And I had a whole garden taken out this year because can't handle it anymore. And I dug up these irises, and I didn't have time to replant them. Can I keep them over winter? And where, you know, what kind of conditions should I keep them in?
You still do have time to get those in the ground.
It's too cold out there.
No, it's not. Come on, get your mukluks on and get your down coat on, get your gloves on and go on out. If you want to overwinter them in a pot, they cannot be too wet. They'll rot out fairly quickly if you do that. I would say in a building, whether that's an outbuilding or a garage or something like that, that's going to be relatively cold, Like you would overwinter almost anything. You're going to keep it slightly damp, maybe once a month, give it just a little tiny bit of water, and you should be fine. I mean, technically, with an iris, you could take it out of the soil completely and totally, put it into vermiculite or perlite, and overwinter it in a net bag, and they would be fine. Because irises are pretty tough.
I have them in a trug, you know, And they are out of the soil, and mm-hmm. I was wondering what to cover them with.
Vermiculite or perlite, something like that. And
okay.
what you want to do is just keep it slightly moist and check them periodically through the winter to make sure nothing's eating on them. And you might want to mist them down then. Rather than wet them, you might mm-hmm. want to just take a water mister and mist the perlite so that it stays slightly moist. But just keep them someplace dark. You sure. should be fine then.
Okay, so the garage or
an outbuilding
of the time or outbuilding
or basement, you know, basement. A cool spot, cool dark spot in a basement.
Great.
You know, something like that would be fine.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thanks a lot.
Have
for
fun
calling.
With them in the spring.
Yeah. Edie in Heartland, your turn. Hi.
Hi. I wish I would have called the whole show. I was gone till noon, but I have five hibiscus potted plants. I have five because the two that I wintered last year stayed so nice, I bought three more. And they just have done gorgeous. Well, I brought all five of them in about a week, 10 days ago, mm-hmm. and put four in the basement, but I thought I'll keep one upstairs because I would like to see if it flowers for me. And it's losing every leaf.
Yeah,
what am I doing wrong?
No. You're not doing anything wrong. What happened is that plant is responding to the immediate change in light, and it will, if a plant cannot react in a longer period of time, meaning you move it in and out slowly, then what's going to happen is those cells say, okay, we can't take in enough, we have to regenerate, and they'll drop the old leaves and you'll see new ones start to come.
Okay.
So
and
don't
it's
worry.
It's probably happening in the basement too, but not as rapidly because it's kind of dark down there.
It's kind of dark, and they're going to go more dormant down there.
Okay,
and
because they just were gorgeous. I couldn't believe how beautiful they were. My neighbor took pictures of them.
And what you do want to watch for in the upstairs is you're going to watch for any kind of insect activity. And you might actually have some insect issues to deal with upstairs trying to keep it alive and going throughout the winter, but you should be fine.
Okay.
You should be
right.
fine.
Yeah,
just make sure you.
Cats don't seem to like it that I've seen so far, so that's no problem.
Oh. Yeah, well, and that's a good thing because otherwise that could be an issue. But you should be fine. Just keep it watered, and if it starts to flower, get some tropical flowering fertilizer. Yeah. Go to the garden center and tell them, I have a flowering hibiscus in the house. Tell me what to buy. And they will tell you what to buy.
Yeah, and the only other question that I have is I'm thinking of watering the downstairs ones maybe once a month and the upstairs once a week. How's that sound?
Once a month is good.
And
check it.
The week is all right? Okay, just see if it's wet. Okay.
You check it and do the ones down in the basement, you just want them to stay slightly moist just so that the plants don't desiccate completely and totally.
Yeah.
Upstairs, it's like any other house plant. So you do the first knuckle test. It should be dry up to your first knuckle before you start watering. And make sure that you allow that to run through so that there's no standing water on it. Although with the hibiscus, standing water isn't going to hurt it.
Oh,
it
yeah.
just might do something to the roots. So
that is the shallowest of the pots, too, because that was the easiest one to lift upstairs.
Yeah. So good luck. Right. You should be fine.
All right. Thank you.
You bet.
John in Onalaska, thank you for calling.
Hello. Question on rhubarb.
Yeah.
In the fall, when the leaves fall and are laying dead on the ground, should I take them off the plant or leave them?
You know, I think rhubarb is highly underestimated in what it can do for the garden. And is the rhubarb in its own patch? Is it in a garden where you've got other plants? Is it in the landscape? How do you have it situated?
Landscape.
Okay, I love rhubarb in the landscape. You can actually leave it alone. It'll be fine. Rhubarb itself on the leaves has some toxins in it that will kill insects off, so it might actually do a little bit for control. And because that leaf is going to really cover the ground until spring, nothing is going to pop up. You know, so even early in spring, you may see a little bit of weed control underneath where those leaves had dropped. So it's up to you and what you want to do with it. It's not going to hurt it to leave it. If you cut them off and take them, it's not going to hurt that either.
Okay, question then. So in the summertime, when some of the leaves turn yellow and fall off underneath, I should leave them to keep the bugs away?
I do. That and the weeds, because they act as good mulch. Yeah, it's not gonna hurt it. Oftentimes, natural pest control advocates will say you can mix up rhubarb leaves with water and use that as an insecticide of some sort. I would want to have specifics on it, but it's not going to hurt anything in the garden.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep. You bet.
Thank you for calling, John. And now let's go to Sue in Fond du Lac. Hi, Sue.
Hi. I was recently out in Colorado, and a quick question about aspens.
Mm.
And they're so beautiful and look so similar to a birch tree. Is there any reason that in states like Iowa and Wisconsin we can't grow aspens?
No. In fact, we've got some aspens, and some of the tree places do sell them. What we run into here, though, is that our soil composition is different than what it is out in the mountains. And so oftentimes we don't get as beautiful of a yellow in the fall is what you can find out in the mountains. But otherwise, no, they do fine. And there are some years where the yellow rivals what you see out in the mountains, but most years it's going to be just kind of a paler version of it. But they do grow here, most definitely.
Okay. I recently transplanted a Cleveland pear about a month ago because they grow so tall. I realized it was going to be interfering with a neighbor's tree over the property line, kind of. So I moved it, and it was easy to move. It's only about 3 years old, but it looked like it had some shock. I watered it, and I fed it a little bit of, you know, diluted Miracle-Gro, but the leaves were, you know, looked like it was not going to make it. Are they pretty hardy? Will that make it to spring?
It might. It depends on how the roots were, and without seeing what they look like after it had been in the ground, hard for me to tell. Cleveland pears are pretty tough, but they're also a softwood tree, and so that combination says, yeah, you might have a couple of years where it's going to limp along a little bit, but be patient and just allow it to do to really bounce back and see what it can do. Yeah. So don't worry about it.
Don't give up on it.
Nah, no. Be patient and talk to it. It'll be fine.
Yeah. Talk to my husband about it.
All right.
Okay, I'm not getting into that one.
Thank you, Sue.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Sean in Webster. Hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for having my call. So I have Boston ferns on my porch in the summertime, and they thrive there, and I don't hardly have to do anything with them. I barely even have to water them. They But whenever I've tried to bring them in and winter them, they've always died.
Yeah. The transition, and again, it goes to humidity factor and the change in light. And so my suggestion is to go and buy a couple new ones and bring them in the house. Buy them for winter and bring them in the house. Unless these are some that have some real meaning for you, it's often easier to just kiss them goodbye at the end of summer and do something else for in the house. Otherwise, what you're going to have is you're going to have this, yes, I failed, when no, in fact, it's the plant that doesn't want to do what you wanted to do. So just go and replace that with a nice, healthy fern and be done with it.
Okay. And that's what I've been doing, but I just wanted to make sure.
It's okay.
You know.
It's okay. You're doing fine. In fact, all the garden centers out there are going, yes, more plant sales. So don't worry about it.
Exactly. And if I could really quickly for your caller just a minute ago, I live in Wisconsin and we have aspen everywhere. They do very well here.
And sometimes color great, sometimes not so great.
Yeah. Yep. But they always sound so good when the wind blows.
Oh, they do,
leaves.
Don't they? And they're so pretty when that's going on.
Good for the wildlife. Whenever, you know, they do some logging, the aspen are always the very first trees up and the deer love them.
Thank you, Sean. Thank you very much for calling. And let's go to Karen in McHenry, Illinois. Hi, Karen.
We're diehard Garden Talk fans.
Great.
And, I couldn't resist in the late season, probably early September, buying a hydrangea glowing embers variety. And with the thought that I would bring it into our sunny master Well, you know, it was such a lingering, beautiful, singular fall, and I left it out on the deck and, you know, covered it with the frost and everything, and then I had to bring it into the garage, and, you know, everything, I just looked at it again, and, you know, all the leaves are dead. It has, like, three budding palms, but I noticed all these little buds in the garage, because there's one little, there's nice window frame, but I just moved it away from the door because it's, you know, getting colder and colder. What should I do with it?
What were you intending to bring it in to have it as a house plant over
winter? Kind of, but then I was like, I don't like the bugs, and we have a lot of mature trees, so we get a lot of, you know, the box elders that like to hide, and then they come out at night.
Well, and at this point, it's been in the garage, so the box elders have probably done what they're going to do. You might have some residuals that are going to crawl out of the pot, but easy to fix that, and that's just pull the plant out of the pot, shake it about a little bit, put it in some fresh soil, and put it back in the pot or get a new one, and then bring it into the house and just start treating it as you would any other house plant. And you should see those buds develop into leaves. And what you are going to have to do, though, is get some acid fertilizer for it and make sure that you're following the instructions for that. I like the pelleted stuff because you can mix it into the soil and then allow the water to do the business rather than using an acid liquid and potentially burning your fingers and blah, blah, blah. So,
and what to do in the spring then?
Treat it like you would take it outside for anything else and see how you can do with that. It's going to have a down period of some sort because it's not not going to just continue to bloom for the entire year. So I would suspect that after you get it to bloom again, then allow it to just do whatever it's going to do and kind of cut back on the water a little bit, move it outside and let it redevelop out there again. And it should, you know, we'll see how you do. You might only get one season of bloom out of it doing that, and then it might decide that it's had enough pressure. But just keep at it.
And should you put it back in the garage and then out on the deck and do it backwards again?
What you do with most plants, if you're moving them in and out, is to gradually acclimate them to their different environment. In a lot of instances, I'll just plunk it from one place to the other, expect the leaves are going to drop, and they'll develop new ones that are going to accommodate the new light. So you can do it gradually if you want to keep the leaves on it, and that's do a few hours, then put it back in, and do that for a few days, and then you increase the light one way or the other. And either way, they're going to survive just fine.
Very good. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm.
Don't do it like I did. The first time I grew tomatoes from seed, I put them, stuck them out a little too early, and I go out the next morning, and they all look completely white. There was no chlorophyll left.
Nothing. Nothing. And, you know, when you start moving stuff in and out, depending on what plant it is you're dealing with, one of the magic temperatures is 50 degrees. So if, you know, like with a tomato, it's a tropical plant.
Yeah.
And so when you're moving things in and out, tropical, houseplant, et cetera, 50 degree mark outside is really when you should start looking at moving things out. And if you're going a little bit ahead of that, you're going to either freeze them or you'll run into other issues.
Kevin in Shell Lake wonders if it's a bad idea to move wild asparagus from a road right away to an existing asparagus patch.
I don't know that I would even bother with that, quite frankly.
Either.
I would go and get... A few issues. First off, is it legal? I don't know, because I don't know the laws on moving roadside stuff. But you're not going to get the best of the best of the best if you're moving roadside asparagus. So I would go and look for...
Get some good male plants.
Exactly. And, you know, you can get some really fantastic stuff from our people around here. Jung's does a beautiful job with the bare root stuff, and they've got great selection. Why would you go and pick along the roadside when you can go and buy some really good stuff? So I would say go get the good stuff.
There you go.
Less disease and insect issues.
Uh-oh. Here comes the music. That means it's it's time to quit the program and close out. Liz?
Are we done already?
We are done. It's always a pleasure. Thank you so much. You'll come back again?
Oh, I would love to. Thanks so much for having me.
Liz Freemuth is a horticulturist extraordinaire, as you've just heard, and she provides concierge horticultural services through her business, The Garden Hoe. Lots of work in Wisconsin, but she goes around the country and works with a lot of great gardeners. Well, on Monday, our physical therapist will come back. In the meantime, thank you for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store.